You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeter.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, December 2nd, 2015. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Brandon Smith, independent journalist whose FOIA caused the release of the dash cam video in the Laquan McDonald case. And then we will also be talking to Mika Utrecht, who's the associate editor of In These Times magazine, on the broader implications for Rahm Emanuel in Chicago. Will he have to go? Also on the program today, 13 years in Gitmo over a mistaken identity. Black Friday breaks a record, folks. Most gun sale requests ever. God bless America. God bless Black Friday. Meanwhile, U.S. announces Iraqi escalation. And on the clown car, Ben Carson falling, sadly, moving back in the clown car.
Not according to my polls.
Jeb, meanwhile, with a revolutionary idea, hints that he may choose a woman as his vice president. Well, that stopped the presses. Hold everything.
Thatcher?
Well, Sarah Palin, apparently, available.
There's some type of script in that.
Is Chris Christie running for president or running from indictment? The New Jersey newspapers mock the New Hampshire endorsement Chris Christie receives. Meanwhile, a huge Fox flail on their Islamophobia. And the Syrian refugee bill passed by the House now looks like it's no longer veto-proof. And a story out of Alabama where local cops from a local, from an Alabama city have been framing black suspects for what appears to be almost two decades. At least the evidence shows two decades. One might imagine it wasn't a recent phenomenon.
All lives matter.
Hmm. There you go. All that and more on today's program. Want to get to Brendan Smith quickly, but also want to let you know today's sponsor is Casper Mattresses. They're obsessively engineered American-made mattresses at a shockingly fair price. And now you can get $50 towards any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/majority using the code majority, as in Majority Report. Look, you spend about a third of your life sleeping, unless, of course, you have kids, in which case you spend about an eighth of your life sleeping. And then about seven-eighths of it dealing with the kids, begging them to let you to sleep. But if you are one of those people who are able to actually get a full night's sleep, you want to make sure you're getting it on a good mattress. Casper brings together two comfy technologies together for better nights and brighter days. Latex foam, memory foam. So they got the sink just right, The bounce is just right no matter how you sleep. I love sleeping on foam. I don't think I've had one of those old bed bug infested mattresses. Don't panic, Michael.
Sounds so gross.
I haven't had one of those in maybe 2 decades, and I've never even gone back. Now, here's the thing. They have a risk-free trial and return policy. They deliver it straight to your house. You could try it for 100 days. If you're not happy, they pick it back up. At the store, what? You see, you lie on the mattress for like 30 seconds? With Casper, you actually get to sleep on it. It's $500 for a twin-size mattress, $950 for a king-size mattress. Compare that to industry averages, that's an outstanding price. So get $50 towards any mattress purchase by going to Casper.com/majority using the code majority. Terms and conditions, as always, apply. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Brendan Smith.
Was a man, and what did he know? Spent his time living in a casino. Never know. Couldn't get away, couldn't ever get it anyway. Couldn't ever level, cause he's living like a devil, hey.
All right, we are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program freelance journalist Brendan Smith. He was the journalist who basically forced the release of the Laquan McDonald video, which is now continues to reverberate throughout Chicago. Welcome to the program, Brendan.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Brendan, just give us a little bit of history on what it took to get this video released and how many roadblocks you ran up, because the timing of the release of this video is obviously pretty relevant here as to everything that happens after the fact.
Right. Well, it was late May when I filed the Freedom of Information request, and technically, the city has 5 or 10 business days to respond, depending on the request. And so they kind of flaunted that part of the law and extended it and took extensions without my permission and delayed it. And at any rate, in early August, I filed suit. They denied me, so I had standing to file civil suit, for the city, in our view, improperly withholding this video from myself and 14 others before me, and the judge ruled in our favor.
And tell me, like, why in May? I mean, this is a McDonald is killed. Very well may have been murdered, according to the prosecutor, over a year ago. So what was it that by May gave you the sense that there was a dash cam video out there, or was it you were just anticipating other people would have had success, or what?
Yeah, so it was this column by Jamie Calvin. He's a journalist covering, longtime journalist in Chicago covering police violence. And so he wrote, I think it was in Slate, he obtained Laquan's autopsy, and it showed that he was shot 16 times, which is really different from the initial account that police gave of the incident. And so that really raised a lot of questions in my mind and in the mind of my collaborator in all this, William Calloway, he's a black activist. He works with families that have experienced police violence. And so we, together, we kind of brainstormed, like, hey, we should request this and sue if they deny us.
And so give us a sense of what else you anticipate has yet to be released. I mean, we know now, right? I mean, at least based upon the what is claimed by a Burger King manager, that there were multiple officers involved in erasing videotapes from the Burger King. You have written that you believe that the police rearranged their cars to hide certain things from their dash cams. Tell us why you believe that, actually.
Well, the city released five videos to us. Only one really shows the incident semi-clearly. It shows Laquan as he's being shot. What it does not show is the officer shooting. And there was one car that we believe, we saw this through the other videos, that one particular car was positioned to show the officer as he's shooting. And that car, the city says, did not result in a video. We're trying to find out why. And we're trying to find out other things. There's some audio experts have come out and said it's really fishy that there's no audio attached to any of these videos. And other things like, you know, the police statements. There were eight or nine police officers on scene, and if any of them gave statements that matched what happened in the video, you know, that is what actually happened, this officer should have been charged almost immediately. And so we want to know, well, did anyone make that kind of a statement? And if they didn't, if all of them seems to cover it up, then they really should be implicated in this as well.
So you have a request in, is this in the form of a Freedom of Information Act as well? I mean, you outline in your piece what your request includes, which is both unreleased video and or internal discussion or statements as to may what have happened, audio from all the cameras, a list of all the names of the officers on the scene, which is pretty stunning that has not been released at this point. You're also seeking a list of names of any employee who knew about the initial public count of the shooting was different from what happened, a list of witnesses, all internal police department communication, all other communications pertinent to this. What is the process in which you're making that request?
We've gone at it two different ways in hopes that the city will comply with at least one of them. We made a Freedom of Information Act request, and we were asking for these in our court case, which is still ongoing. The city can object to that if they want in our case, but then the judge has to decide whether it's relevant to this case. You know, and this case really, in our minds, it's about why the public has not been granted access to information about this particular shooting. And this shooting is just demonstrative of things that happen in the police department all the time, we think. There were 70 deaths by police gunfire in Chicago between 2010 and 2014, 70 deaths. And so the Independent Police Review Authority here, in our view, is not very independent. They didn't find that, they found one of those to not be justified, which means all the rest they thought were justified. And that's kind of crazy, particularly in light that, in light of the whistleblower that came out of that agency earlier this year and said his bosses told him to change his findings about investigations of police misconduct.
And I want to be clear on that. I mean, this guy, Lorenzo Davis, I mean, it wasn't like this was not known, right? I mean, he was interviewed on national television. He was reported on in national, you know, websites, they're all national, I guess, in some regard. But the point being that this is sort of well known, and there was no investigation about his claims. What are there?
Not to my knowledge. And the Independent Police Review Authority continues to operate as normal. The mayor yesterday, when he fired the police superintendent following our case, he appointed several people to a task force to investigate police discipline and police conduct. I really hope that they take this opportunity to change things and not have kind of like a political Band-Aid on things.
Let me ask you this. I mean, what is there? How much of an outcry is there in Chicago at this point to investigate these other officers who are on the scene? I mean, it seems pretty stunning that nothing had been done until this video was very reluctantly released, and that none of the other officers seem to be implicated in this. There doesn't seem to be any implications for the reports that surveillance footage at this Burger King was erased. I mean, is there anything else that's being done? I know that the state attorney general has called for a federal investigation. What else are you hearing is in the works?
Well, I think the city would respond by saying that the Cook County State's Attorney's investigation, you know, the one that resulted in the murder charge, it will be enough to serve justice in this case. And if they find evidence that other police officers covered it up, then they'll charge them themselves. But the problem is that the public seems to have lost trust in this whole system, because the state's attorney here didn't issue charges until the video, until the judge said the video had to be released. So everyone's kind of wondering, like, well, are they going to try to seek justice for this police officer, and are they going to try to look into the other officers who saw things? And that's why we're asking for all this stuff to be released to the public, so that public trust can be restored.
Lastly, let me just ask you this. What, I mean, do we know the state's, do we know when the prosecutors had first seen this video? I mean, do we have a sense of that, of what the timing is? Because, I mean, presumably they saw it before it went public. When you FOIA'd this, were you FOIA'ing this dash cam from the police department or from the prosecutor's office? Like, what entity had sort of jurisdiction or actually sort of had that video to release it?
Well, I requested it from the police department itself, and they had a copy. And the prosecutor's office certainly had the power to, and, you know, they always work closely with police anyway, but they also had the power to request it in their investigation. So I can only assume that they requested it almost immediately after it happened, you know, within a matter of days or a couple of weeks. So the prosecutor's office, long story short, had it for 13 months and didn't do anything about it. I think their contention has been that it took this long because they had to interview a lot of people. Well, okay, but there was also this video evidence, and maybe that was enough. A lot of people think that was enough to charge him by itself.
Right, and it's quite a coincidence that the video was forced out the same week that they made these charges. Brandon Smith, thank you so much for your time today, and you know, congratulations and keep up the good work.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Micah Utrecht and talk to him about just how much pressure there is being generated here to overthrow essentially that system that's there. I mean, we have already seen Rahm Emanuel in very short order fire his police commissioner. By short order, I mean the time from the length of time from when it appeared he would not do so to when he did so happened rather quickly. Obviously, this has been something that in some respects has probably been in the works for years insofar as deserving it. It's just that when this video gets released, then it becomes a problem that they cannot hide. We'll be right back with Micah Utrecht. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. Micah Utrecht, he is the associate editor of In These Times magazine, and author of Strike for America, Chicago Teachers Against Austerity. He has a Vice piece out right now about suggesting that firing Chicago's top cop might not be enough to save Mayor Rahm Emanuel's job. And it's not just Rahm Emanuel whose head seems to be on the chopping block. Am I right about that, Micah?
Right. In fact, the maybe more likely, at least in the short term, person to face repercussions for this is State Attorney Anita Alvarez.
And just tell us what has happened. I mean, obviously this was a 13 months in the making, but the video was released. It's Alvarez's office who then indicts the cop, and it seems like Rahm Emanuel is very happy to have it all end there, but it doesn't. So just give us a timeline of what's happening, and include in that both Rahm Emanuel's call for an investigation an independent investigation board, essentially, for the police review. And it calls for Loretta Lynch, the attorney general, to investigate.
Right. So the timeline obviously begins with the killing of Laquan McDonald, which was 400, as protesters, one of the chants that protesters have been making is 400 days, 16 shots. So 400 days since the killing, more than 400 days since the killing of Laquan McDonald to the day that Anita Alvarez announces the murder charges against Officer Van Dyke. Someone was asking me, a reporter from outside of Chicago, what is the sort of most charitable reading of Alvarez's decision to, her actions in this case? And I mean, there's really not a very charitable explanation I can come up with. She waits 400 days until the release of the video because of the fight of Brandon Smith, who you just had on, and others. They're battling with the city for over 400 days to get this video out. And finally, when it's clear they're going to lose that case, that's when Alvarez announces the charges against Officer Van Dyke. So clearly what should have taken a couple weeks, maybe a couple months at most, stretches out into over a year, assumedly because Alvarez hoped that none of this would ever come to light. And so, since it's come out, the Attorney General, the Illinois Attorney General, Lisa Madigan, has called for this investigation from U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch, something one could imagine, something like what we saw in Ferguson, which if you remember, the federal report that came after Ferguson was the report that showed that there was this whole culture of whether it's corruption or it's sort of institutionalized. This is the report that said that the Ferguson police force was sort of nickel and diming its residents through a really close policing in order to pay the bills, basically, charging semi-frivolous tickets to its residents, and just really a sort of culture of harassment of its residents in order to sort of keep their coffers full, which led to this level of frustration that's happening there. So that one, the best case scenario, I think, is that a similar report that really takes stock of everything that's gone on, that's gone wrong in the within Chicago law enforcement over the last few years, would take that into account. And of course, that would include, go far beyond this shooting to include other brutality complaints, but also things like Holman Square, which we got quite a bit of attention about earlier this year. This essentially what people were calling a black site of the Chicago Police Department, where people would disappear sometimes for days and no one would know where they were without charges being filed against them. We, of course, have this history of being the city that had a police commander torture black men for almost two decades to get confessions out of them, who only recently that case was wrapped up. So there's a lot here for an outside investigation to dig into.
Yeah, I gotta say, just in and I, I'm not, I don't normally pay attention to the policing practices of Chicago, but obviously I've been reading up over the past couple of days different stories that people have posted over the years, and it's shocking. You had a whistleblower come out from this Independent Police Review Authority who basically said, like, this entire process is completely compromised. Like, if we found something that they didn't want, they would just tell me to lie about it, and nothing was done. I don't even understand, like, how that works. Is there not even when you're talking about Madigan, who's the attorney general, the state attorney general? I mean, what is the relationship that she has with a guy like Rahm? In other words, I would imagine, Rahm Emanuel tries to get out in front of this, right, by appointing an independent review board to review the Independent Police Review Authority, right, which starts sounding funny in a way if it wasn't so sick. I mean, he's obviously doing this to get out ahead of any type of review by the feds, essentially. But what can you tell me about that dynamic? And then I want to get a sense from you as to what you anticipate the feds, how they would, under what auspices they would investigate the police department.
Well, I. To be honest, know little about what the relationship between Madigan and Emanuel is. I mean, just to go back to your point about this review board, it was, the WBEZ, the local NPR affiliate, reported earlier this year that there was a guy, this whistleblower you reference. I mean, he gave these shocking statistics. I mean, something like 400 shootings in one year, only one of them being, pursued disciplinary action against the officer. 97% of the complaints that are brought to this board result in no disciplinary action for an officer. And in this exact case, Officer Van Dyke had 18 complaints against him through this board, and somehow had never faced any kind of disciplinary charges, including a case that the city ended up settling for $350,000, in which he was involved in the arrest of a motorist who was accused of not having the front license plate, and then all of a sudden he has two broken arms when he's broken shoulders when he's cuffed. There's just insanity. 97% of complaints result in no disciplinary action. I mean, this one guy has 18 complaints against him, Officer Van Dyke, and nothing happens. It's sort of shocking stuff. And one wonders, of course, how this new board, as you mentioned, the board to review the board, would be any different. And I don't think many people here in Chicago believe that board is anything other than just something that's sort of tossed together to give the veneer that changes. Some kind of change is happening. I mean, why should this board be any different? Especially a board, the folks who are on this new task force that Emmanuel has put together don't include anyone from the communities that are affected by most affected by this violence. You know, it's not anyone who has been organizing around these things. So Deval Patrick, the former governor of Massachusetts, is the head of it. I mean. I don't think anyone, no one is sort of thinks that this board is meaning anything new for what's going on with the police force in Chicago.
Give me the general sense. Like, I mean, how widespread is the outrage? I mean, is there, you mentioned that nobody on this independent task force, I guess, to review the independent authority, is of the community. And Deval Patrick is the very least has a very good relationship with President Obama. I don't know if that extends to Rahm Emanuel. I don't know. Maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. But certainly, I would imagine those type of relationships are more important if you're interested in not being held accountable for something than having the Attorney General come in, because the Attorney General has significantly more independence, particularly on this type of stuff, it seems to me. But, how widespread is it? Or is there a sense in Chicago that, like, well, you know, Rahm is doing what he's got to do, and, you know, there's a lot of gunplay here, and, you know, this guy, I'm just curious. I have no sense of who thinks what in Chicago at this point.
I think that, in recent years and months, this huge number of these kinds of cases that we've seen around the country have gotten they've gotten lots of attention, but they've often polarized different places. You know, people hunkered down on the side of the police or on the side of, racial justice activists who are mad about these shootings. There's what makes this case different is one. I mean, just the video itself. You watch the video. This is a video of a police officer shooting an unarmed teenager, not even adult, 16 times. I mean, it's a really disturbing thing to watch. Something 13 or 14 of the shots hit his body when he's on the ground. I mean, it's just mind-boggling to watch. The sort of brutality, the callousness of that act. Is one piece of this, but the other thing is that there's as I mentioned earlier, there's no real charitable way to interpret how the city has handled this case. I mean, we're talking about 13 months from his death until the charges against Van Dyke are made. I mean, what is clear, which Brandon Smith has written quite a bit about, is that there's no way to interpret this other than a mass level of cover up,
right?
All throughout the city. I mean, the 16 shots is one thing, but then when you've got the entire city government apparatus acting in concert to try to cover this up for as long as possible, and what the other piece of it is that. What it's clear, and I've seen this from quarters that are far from lefty progressive stalwarts in Chicago, center right and politically centrist columnists in the city, saying it is clear that the reason that part of the reason that this was delayed so much was so that Rahm Emanuel could get reelected, because if this video had come out back last year, around October, November, December, this was, if you remember, the height of campaign season for Rahm Emanuel's
re-election. Yeah, we spoke to you then.
Yeah, that's right. And Emanuel was really being hammered by communities of color and by progressives for his neoliberal agenda that he's carried out in the city. And what so many people in the city are saying is that, of course, if this video had come out at that time, there was no way that he'd be able to win over You know, he wouldn't have African-American leaders coming out and speaking in support of him. I mean, he probably would have lost a good chunk of the vote. I mean, there's it's very easy to imagine that he could not have won re-election if this tape had come out back then. So, I mean, from top to bottom, from the killing itself to the cover up to the clearly sort of crass political maneuvering to delay the video's release to protect his reelection, I think there's a lot of widespread anger, not just from the kind of usual suspects, progressives and racial justice activists who get upset about these kinds of things, but the average Chicagoan really sees this as a pretty craven.
Right. It seems quite obvious to me. I mean, that it's not just even about his reelection. I mean, their intention, it seems, it's quite obvious, was to have this simply go away. I mean, the idea that it took them 14 months to bring about these charges and they just coincidentally had wrapped up their investigation just the week before this tape was forced to be released is a joke, right? I mean, they gave the family $5 million. I imagine there's a process involved in that, right? It doesn't just happen. I mean, tell me about the timing of that, because that also strikes me as sort of prima facie evidence that this was a cover-up, insofar as that the idea that they would be awarding compensation or some type of, I guess, damages to the family before there has been any type of administrative or judicial review seems really suspect to me.
I mean, that's the way that many police forces around the city, around the country operate, right? Is that that's why they're willing to pay these kinds of payouts, is because they want the cases
to go away.
Yeah, and that's clearly what happened in this situation, and you know, credit goes to Brandon Smith, who preceded me on the show, to be doggedly insist that they not be able to cover this up and to have it go away.
And my understanding is that the city over the past couple of years has had to pay out like nearly $500 million. Is that right? In these type
right.
of claims.
Yeah, I mean, it's enormous amounts of money, and we don't know the details on all of them, obviously. I mean, the obvious question that one wonders when you see, when you lay out the basic details of the case like this is, how many cases like this do we have no idea exist?
Right.
I mean, this is an extraordinary set of circumstances. You know, there were community activists who go looking for journalists to, you know, fight to get this tape released because they know that how heinous this crime was, how heinous the killing of Laquan McDonald was. And so they have to, you know, go find a journalist who will then find a law firm who will represent him to fight the city for 13 months and spend who knows how much money fighting to get this tape release, and it takes them over a year. How many other cases, you know, less heinous, maybe there were four shots or five shots for someone who was, you know, 20 years old, you know, not a teenager, fewer shots, but still an incredible crime. How many of those cases exist that we have no clue about? The other thing that is worth mentioning is that the officer who killed a 22-year-old African-American woman, Rekia Boyd, his name is Dante Servin. Her case has not gotten as much attention as the Laquan McDonald case, but is something that African-American young people have been organizing around for a long time in the city, made her an important case in terms of the larger Black Lives Matter movement. The charges against him, he killed Rekia Boyd when he was off duty, and the announcement that he would be fired was finally made right around the same time that all this happened. So it was clear that you know, the announcement of the murder charges her case, you know, she was killed several years ago, more than a year ago, two or three years ago, I believe. No movement on firing this officer, not even charging him with murder, just firing him from the Chicago Police Department. There was no movement on that until the Laquan McDonald case. Until the tape was made public. So it's just extremely clear, I think, to the average person, the sort of the the city of Chicago is just throwing anything that they can to this case to try to placate people and make it go away.
All right. So lastly, realistically, do you think this is going to threaten at the very least? I mean, I guess there's other questions, right? I mean, the city's DA, she's up for re-election in 2016. Rahm Emanuel isn't for, I guess, at least three years, right? Do you think this is in any way going to threaten him?
Well, I'll just say first, and I write about this in the Vice piece, you know, first of the question of Alvarez, I put this question to political scientist Dick Simpson, who is someone who lots of Chicagoans trust on what's going on in Chicago politics, yesterday, and he said that he did not hesitate when I asked him about Alvarez's future. He said she's done. There's no way that she wins re-election in the primary in March. She already had a challenger named Kim Fox, who was running to the left of her on criminal justice issues, he said this really seals the deal for her. She's done. He didn't anticipate that she was going to be resigning before her term is up. I mean, she's a democratically elected official, but he thought there was no way that she wins re-election after this.
Apparently,
Emanuel.
I'm sorry. Apparently, Louis Gutierrez has just withdrawn his support for her.
Yeah, that's right.
Interesting.
Yeah, he released a letter where he alluded to private meetings that he had with her, pledging his support, and he pulled it as well. I mentioned in the piece that part of the majority of the city's the city council's Latino caucus. Including Chuy Garcia, who's not on the city council, but he joined them, made an announcement earlier this week saying that they are calling for Alvarez to resign. Sure. So important segments of the Latino community, calling for her, saying that she's totally botched this and other cases and calling for her to resign. So the resignation might not happen, probably won't happen, but if you believe Dick Simpson, that she's done come March. Emanuel is probably not going to resign. As you mentioned, he has over 3 years left in his term. But it is, I watched the press conference where he was announcing McCarthy's firing yesterday, and I had never seen him so visibly kind of shaken and on the ropes. And I don't mean shaken in terms of, out of moral concern for this family. He seemed like he was politically in a really tough spot. I mean, even during his reelection campaign, in which he was forced into a runoff by Chuy Garcia, he had always looked sort of secure in what he was saying. He seemed to have a sort of supreme confidence, and this is clearly one of, if not the most important political scandals in his time as mayor thus far. So, I write in the piece that I don't think he'll be resigning anytime soon. On the other hand, things have been moving so quickly here in Chicago over just the last week that who knows where we'll be in the next week, and who knows what revelations will come to light. And if people like Brandon Smith, who are still filing FOIA requests and still fighting the city to get copies of emails and other correspondence about this case, if that reveals that Emanuel had a important role in trying to cover this up, again, I have nothing to make me think that he was intimately involved in covering the case up, but if some of those kind of emails were to be released, who knows where things could end up. We may see a very different Chicago even within the next couple weeks or months.
Micah Utrecht, associate editor in These Times magazine. We will link to the Vice article on Rahm Emanuel and what's happening in Chicago. Thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, folks, going to head into the fun half of the program. Just a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible. We're looking to make a huge investment in throat lozenges and in chamomile tea. So if you enjoy the program and you can afford to become a member and support it, please do so at jointhemajorityreport.com. If you can't but still want that bonus of the the extra content that we provide every day, then send me an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We'll work something out. Remember, yesterday we lost Shelley Silver. He was a big supporter with multiple sock puppets. Of course, it had to be, the money had to be laundered quite a bit through the Caymans, and that's why we gave him all that good coverage. We were very, very kind to him over the years.
You will notice a pattern of reports we do that benefited his various law practices.
Oh, my God. It's unbelievable.
It's kind of disgusting.
We went to the mat for the guy, but he also went for the mat to us.
Yeah, he did.
So we're trying to get together. Maybe we'll get it. We'll set up a new level of support for the program, like a Sheldon Silver muffin basket support.
Ooh,
so
I
we
like
can
it.
Sell him, send him like a monthly muffin basket.
Passover won't be the same without him.
No, it's going to be very difficult. Also, folks, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. It's great coffee. And if you buy crap from Amazon, I know a lot of people are buying crap right now because it's, you know, holiday season. MajorityReportKickback.com. MajorityReportKickback.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Be right back with the fun half. Going to keep it tight today because I'm still under the weather. And, you know, we should try and do that one day of the week. All right, right back.